Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is daf test. We are on Ches Amud Aleph on the very bottom of the Amud. We start today a very long sugya. The sugya is going to take us through the end of yesterday's daf and through the entirety of today's daf. Let's begin. Just by way of introduction, we are speaking here about the case of Motzi Shem of the Torah. Describes the following scenario. A man marries a woman. Now remember, when I say marriage is divided into two stages. The first stage of marriage is Kedushin, where he gives her either Kesef Kedushin or Shtar, or it could be done also done Bibiya, but he gives her Kesef Kedushin, and they are married. At the first stage of marriage, they are husband and wife. At this point in time, as a married woman, if she commits adultery, she is Chayv Misa. She's subject to the death penalty. Then the second stage of marriage is a Nisuin, is where then they live together, husband and wife. They experience what's called Chuppah, and they live together as husband and wife. Now, we know the halacha is very clear that after the kedushin she's a married woman, and in the event that she commits adultery, so she's subject to the death penalty, like a married woman would. Torah describes a scenario in which a man marries a woman. Now, in this particular case, she happens to be a nara marasa. She is she's very young. She just turned 12 years of age, and she's undergone the first stage of marriage. After the Nisuin, after the first night of him being together with his wife, he goes to court the next day and he lays the following accusation against his wife. And that is that although she told him that she was a basula, turns out that she wasn't. Or at least he thinks that she was not. He claims that she was not. And so now, this can either be a case of him maligning her, or he could be right. Now, if he's right, so she's not going to be subject to the death penalty just because he says so. In other words, in order to be Chayv Misa, so you need Shnei Edom, you need two witnesses to actually testify to the fact that she committed adultery with another man over the course of the Kiddushin, from Kiddushin till Nisuin. But at the same time, however, he's going to be offered the following in terms of his credibility. Actually, you know what? Let me hold off on that point. I'm going to get back to that point in just a moment. But let's say he's not right. Let's say he's wrong. Let's say he's just maligning her. Let's say he's just, it's a case of defamation of character. So at which point in time the Torah says the following. If he's defaming her, motzi shemra, he's saying a lie. So the Torah says that he's going to be punished in one of three ways. One, he's going to be subject to malchus. Two, he has to pay a fine to her father of 100 shkalim. It's the largest fine that the Torah doles out. And three is that he may never divorce her. He has to live with her for the rest of his life. And he's prohibited from divorcing her. So three punishments for a case of defamation. Now again, if he's right, which if it's supported by witnesses, so she's subject to the death penalty. So when going into court over the case of Motzi Shemra, so is this going to be a civil case or is this going to be a capital case? Is it tried by three or is it tried by 23? So in the Mishnah, we had a machlok between Rameir and the Chacham. Rameir says, tried by three. The Chachamim say, tried by 23. Now, as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, when we started this discussion yesterday, but I'm just setting ourselves up for the entirety of today, our entire Gemara today is dedicated to this topic. So the Gemara says, let's think this through. If he comes into court with witnesses, this is a capital case. And so therefore, there's no disagreement. Everyone, of course, is going to say that the case needs to be tried in front of 23 judges. And if he doesn't come into court with witnesses, so then at best or at worst, this is a civil case. And there, you only need three. So where is the Mishnah having a machlokas by Motzi Shemra, or better yet, why is the Mishnah having a machlokas by Motzi Shemra, whether or not we start the case with three or whether we start the case with 23? This is our question, and the entirety of today's daf is going to be dedicated to this question. How do we understand the machlokas in the Mishnah? Yesterday, what we did is that we went over two answers, Ula's answer and Rava's answer. Let's review. I'm going to do it inside. So, in the Gemara inside in Ches Amud Aleph, I'm going to start from the beginning of the sugya. The heading, V'chacham Omrim Motzi Shemra Mesrim V'shlosha. So the Chachamim say 23, and again, the Mishnah also brings the opinion of Rameir, which is 3. V'chi Yesh Badinim Nefashos Mayhave. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If he's coming into court without witnesses, it's a civil case. It's defamation. Why is there a debate in the Mishnah of whether you need 3 or 23? Obviously, you only need 3. So Amar Ula. So the Gemara presents answer number one, that of Ula. Choshen Laz Kamiflagi, that according to Ula, we're worried about Laz. Now I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi, and I will continuously throughout the rest of this daf present the Gemara like Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam. You can see on the side of the Gemara the lengthy Tosis over here on Chesamad Aleph. Rabbeinu Tam offers a different pshat. See Rabbeinu Tam for a different pshat. I'm presenting the Gemara like Rashi. Rashi says like this. Rashi says that according to Ula, here's our concern. We go into court. At this point in time, I don't have witnesses. It's defamation. It's a civil case. However, what's going to happen is that it's going to hit the press. Now, I know back then they didn't have a press, but the point is still the same. Word is going to get out that we have a case now in court where the guy is making a claim against his wife that she was not a basula, that in fact she was a ba'ula, and now if in fact there are witnesses, the witnesses are going to come to court and they're going to testify against her. Ula says whether or not we're concerned about this eventuality is the machlok between Rav Meir and the Chacham. Rav Meir's position is, I'm not worried about such an event. Obviously, if the witnesses come, so then we'll transform this into a capital crime, into a capital case. But until that point in time, I'm not worried. And right now, it remains dinei mamonos. It's just a civil case, and we leave it just as a civil case. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no. The Chachamim are choshishin le... The Chachamim will worry that this may happen. Let's get ourselves up ready right now. Let's put a court together of 23 because this is a concern that maybe the witnesses will come and then we will be prepared. That's all this explanation of the Mishnah, the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Okay. Rava, let me read this inside. Rabbi Meir Savrein Choshen Laz, Rabban Savrein Choshen Laz. Okay, that is answer number one. Parenthetically, there are going to be 8 answers all together by the end of this entire sugya. Rava Amar, Rava now is going to give us answer number two, which is, Kuli Amar Laz Lo Chayshinan. Rava says that when we're not worried about Laz, we're not worried about the word getting out and the witnesses coming out of the woodwork, this is not a concern, neither by Rav Meir nor by the Chachamim. V'hacha b'choshen l'chvodim shal rishonim kemifligim. Over here, we're worried about the honor of the judges. V'hacha b'maizkinan, and what are we talking about? Kigon d'ichnef b'yasrim b'tlasa, l'meidan dina nefashos. Where in the onset of the court case, we brought in 23 because we thought this was going to be a capital case, the ibador. But then turns out, although the husband claimed that he had witnesses that she committed adultery, when we got to court, the husband was unable to produce those witnesses. And va'amr lahu dain lemi dinim amanos. To which the husband says, "Okay, this is not a capital case, but at least let this be a civil case." And so therefore, it should be tried by 3. So in other words, what the Gemara is now saying according to Rav is the following. Let's get this straight. He comes into court and he says, look, I got a big problem on my hands. My wife claimed she was a basula. She's not. She's a ba'ula. And furthermore, I know she committed adultery. And I'm going to bring in the witnesses to prove that this is in fact the case. Fine. They now go into the courtroom. The court now is set up with 23 judges as they all think it's a capital case. He goes into the courtroom and he says, Your Honors, I'm sorry. I don't have the witnesses that I said I was going to produce. So now, it's no longer a capital case. So, the Chachamim say that, you know why it's going to be 23? It'll be 23 because we don't want to excuse anybody. Meaning we have a mitzvah to honor our zakenim, our dayanim, and it's a slight to their honor if we excuse any of them at this point in time, even though they're not needed, even though they're unnecessary. But the Chachamim's position is, choshen lechvodam shel rishonim. We don't need all 23, but now that they're here, let's keep them here. And according to Rav Meir, not a concern. I'm not worried about the cover. I'm sure right now their time is very precious, and they're not going to be offended if we say to 20 of them, look, you can go now. We don't need 20 of you. The Gemara says this is the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Let me just clarify a point that Rashi says over here at this point in time, and that is the following. If there are no witnesses that she committed adultery, so what now is the case? So it's a civil case. Now by a civil case, what do I mean by that? What exactly is a civil case? Rashi explains like this. Husband goes into the court and the husband says, my wife was not a basula. Now did she commit adultery? I don't know. I don't have witnesses. But I know she's not a basula. Now, what is he really saying by saying that? He's saying that, look, we're going to get a divorce and I'm not going to pay her ksuva. I wrote her a ksuva, and I am, of course, obligated to pay her a settlement upon divorce, but the wedding was done under false pretense. She told me she was a basula, and now it turns out that she's not. Now, generally speaking, do we believe an individual? The answer, of course, is no. Meaning, if a person is accusing another of forfeiting a financial obligation, we don't believe the person on his own. We need two witnesses. Why in this case over here, when he claims that his wife wasn't a basula, why is this now a civil case? Why is she at this point in time going to be forfeiting her ksuva? Rashi over here points out, this is based on a chazakah, on a presumption. A presumption goes like this, that a person now spent a lot of money on this wedding. In other words, he didn't marry her only just to claim and to accuse her of being unfaithful, or at least not being a basula. He just spent a lot of money on this wedding. Chazakah, that we have a general presumption that if a man gets married and invests all this money into the marriage, the next day he won't wake up, go to court and say, I'm going to divorce her and I'm not going to pay her ksufa. There must be something to his claim. And so based on this chazakah, we generally extend special credibility to the husband, where if he claims that she wasn't a basula, we're going to believe him to the extent in which she's going to be forfeiting her ksuva.
So why doesn't he claim 100 instead of 0?
His claim from a civil standpoint is that I'm going to divorce her and I'm not going to pay her ksuva. Right.
But then the Torah requires that has to be secured up with
No, the only time we're going to, this is a capital case, is if he has the witnesses. Not going to kill her based on his testimony. Meaning, even with this chazakah, and even with this special nemanos, it's not going to go so far as to kill her, so that for that you need two witnesses. But for the monetary loss of the ksuva, so for that extent we're going to believe him. Okay.
Oh, sure. If this woman had indeed done something, and there were witnesses who had warned her, whatever, right? Why are they like waiting until the husband brings her before they come to court? Why didn't they report like 6 months ago, whatever this occurred?
And my simplest answer to you is they should have. But for whatever reason, they didn't.
They're just like latent, sitting by, waiting for husband.
It's strange. I'm with you. It is strange.
In the case of musician, right, it's a case when after the wedding, the husband says that he was going to
right.
The father.
Right.
And the father has to produce two witnesses or bring the thing, and if he doesn't, then she gets
tequila. But only with witnesses. I assure you, it's only going to happen with witnesses. It cannot happen without witnesses. In other words, no one's going to be put to death based on the testimony of one individual, and he over here...
No.
Let's be clear. She's not going to die based on his testimony. But she will be losing her ksuva. Now, if the father can counter by proving that she was the basula, so this is defamation, and then we go back to the punishments that I outlined in the beginning of this year today, where he's going to get malchus, he's going to have to pay the fine of 100 slime, and he's going to have to live with her for the rest of her life, and he may not divorce her. Okay, fine. So, we have right now two explanations of the Gemara, that of Ula and that of Rav Meir. Again, just quickly recap. Number one, Ula, Choshishin, Lalaz. Are we worried about the word getting out and witnesses coming out of the woodwork? That's the Machloshim Rameir and the Chachamim. According to Rava, no. This is a very specific case in the Mishnah where he comes into court claiming that he has witnesses. Turns out that he doesn't. And now, are we going to excuse 20 of the 23 as this is no longer a capital case? And Rameir says, we'll excuse 20, and the Chachamim say, we will not. Choshen l'chvodam shel rishonim. We're worried about the honor of the judges. Meisei. The Gemara challenges now, we're on the very top of...
Why couldn't it be like all based on anything? Why does it have to be one as opposed to the other one?
It's just a question of what is the nekuda machlokas? What's the point of contention? You're right, we could put a bunch together, but these Amoraim are just giving one central point in which the debate is hinging on. Meisei, the Gemara challenges the Gemara now on the top of Chesam and Beis. The Gemara starts off with Chachamim Omrim, Tavu Mamon B'Shlosha, Tavu Nefashos Besim B'Shlosha. Now, the Bryce over here says like this. If he comes into court promoting that it's a civil case, so then we only need three judges. If he comes into court claiming it's a capital case, now his claim has to be that he has witnesses, but he says he does, so then it's going to be tried in front of 23. Fine. So here we have a Bryce that clearly states that the number of judges are going to be based on how he's promoting this case. Civil, 3. Capital, 23. Now, Bishlam ala Rava, the Gemara says, now for Rava, this works out beautifully. Because Tiba'o manu tchila b'shlosha. Tiba'o nefasha tchila afilu mamon b'asim b'shlosha. Because, remember, Rava just gave us the explanation. One would be a civil case when he says, I don't have witnesses, I just have my testimony that she's not a basula. And again, because of the chazaka, we're going to believe him. So, but it's a civil case, which means that it's going to be tried in front of three. And if he comes into court saying, no, this is a capital case, I'm going to produce the witnesses, so then we assemble a court of 23. And even if he doesn't have the witnesses, but once 23 are put together, we're not going to excuse anyone, at least according to the Chachamim. I now have a pshat in the Brisa according to Rava. But Elalula Kasha. But according to Ula, what did Ula say? I'm worried that this is going to generate generate interest, and I may get the witnesses out of the woodwork. According to Ula, we're always going to put together a courtroom of 23. And if that's true, so then, how did you understand the Brisa? The Brisa says, sometimes this is just a civil case, and sometimes it's going to be three. But according to Ula, that's not true. According to Ula, it's always going to be 23. So Amar Rava, Ani Varisha Bechabura, Tirgama, Uman Rav Chiyabar Avin. So Rava says, I have a way of explaining this Brisa according to Ula, and let's just reflect for just a moment, because this happens a lot of times in the Gemara, and it's beautiful to see this. Where even though Rava's debating Ula, and Rava doesn't like Ula's explanation, but Rava's going to defend Ula. Why? Because they're not debating for the sake of debate. They're debating because they want to find out what the truth is. And if Rava has a way of defending Ula, he'll do so, even though he doesn't necessarily agree so with him himself. So Rava says, together with Rabbi Chiya Bar Avin, who's the lion of the group, so I can explain the Braisa according to Ula. And how would I do that? It's a little bit complicated, but it goes like this. The husband comes into court and says, my wife committed adultery, I have the witnesses to prove so. And he brings in the witnesses. The father counters with his own set of witnesses. And what the father's witnesses do is they're mazim, the witnesses of the husband. You're going to hear that word a lot. What that means is that the witnesses of the father say, there's no way that the witnesses of the husband know what they're talking about. They were with us at the time. There's a Chiddush HaTorah that we believe the second pair of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. Furthermore, not only do we believe the second set over the first set, but the halacha is vasisim lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv, that whatever the original witnesses want to do, so they're going to be punished in the way in what they. At least what they conspire to do. This is what's called Edom Zomimim. So the case over here of the Braisa is a case of husbands coming in with witnesses that she committed adultery. Father comes in with another pair of witnesses saying that the witnesses of the husband are Edom Zomimim. And now, Balagavos Mamon Mi Baal Bishlosha. So now that this is a new case, meaning when I say new case, what do I mean by that? Once this turns into a case of Edom Zomimim, and now once we are, once we're basically flipping the case because the father produced Edom HaMazimim, so now this is strictly a monetary case, this is not a capital case. Let's consider. The father brought in the second pair of witnesses, and now the first pair of witnesses are knocked out. And not only are they knocked out, but now this is strictly a case of defamation. We are at this point in time no longer going to say, well, the husband does say that she's a ba'ula, she wasn't a virgin, because he brought in witnesses and the witnesses are disproven. We're not going to go back to the husband and say, oh, but we'll believe you. No way. Meaning, if he brought in witnesses that are proven to be liars, we are no longer going to extend any credibility to the husband himself. And so now, the only thing at issue over here is that the witnesses of the husband and the husband himself are now subject to pay the defamation payment. This is strictly a civil case. This is no longer a capital case. We're not worried about witnesses coming out of the woodwork. He brought the witnesses in already, and they were proven to be false. So at this point in time, it's strictly a civil case. And so even according to Ula, in such a case, I only need a court of three.
We started with 23.
Right, even though we started with 23, but that was on the first case. But now that this is a case of Edom Zomimim, it's a new case, and because there's no eventuality that this will turn into a capital case, so therefore I need only a court of three.
How do you, okay, it's fine.
The first set of witnesses should get killed.
The first set of witnesses I do hear you. The first set of witnesses are not going to get killed. We're going to explain that a little bit better later on. Okay. Yes, and Danny, same. Okay, good. Fine. So what we have now done is we've defended the position of Ula. Where do we stand right now? I have a Mishnah, we have a Mishnah, that says that in a case of Motzei Shem Ra, Rav Meir says, done in front of a court of three. According to the Chacham, done in front of a court of 23. We have so far two explanations on the book. We have Ula's explanation, and we have Rav's explanation. We challenged Ula, we defended Ula, we continue in the Gemara. We are now up to explanation number three. I told you there's going to be eight in total. So Abayi says, let's start off with the first two points, which he says, I'm going to assume is true. That once the case hits the court, the witnesses may in fact come out of the woodwork. And everyone agrees to that. And once we assemble a court of 23, we're not going to excuse anyone because we're worried about the honor of the judges. So now, there were witnesses who did see the adultery. And not only did they see the adultery, they issued a warning. As we all know, you cannot punish anyone until properly warned. Proper warning means that you have to tell them what they're about to do is wrong. You have to make sure they heard you. They have to accept that they received a warning. And the warning has to be specific. Now, how specific does a warning have to be? This is now going to be a point of contention. You see somebody about to commit adultery. This is a capital case. This is a capital crime. You tell them, don't do it. And if you do it, you're going to be killed. But what you don't tell them, however, what you didn't tell them is what form of death penalty are they going to receive. Does the warning have to be so specific that you have to tell them not only are you going to die, not only is Beis Din going to kill you, but you also have to tell them which capital punishment they are subject to. This is a machlokis hatanayim, whether such a warning is considered sufficient warning. V'haytanu detanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa. V'shar kol chayve miso shebetor, when it comes to any other death penalty. What does that mean, any other? Rashi points out, the starting point of the discussion was talking about maces. Somebody who lures another person to be over to avodah zarah. Such an individual in the Torah is referred to as a maces, or if I could speak the other language, a mesit, right? It's a tough. So I mentioned before, I'm bilingual. So the Torah for such an individual says that you have no compassion for such an individual. You kill the individual even without a warning. It's a special halacha dedicated to the maces that such an individual is killed even without a warning. But that's unique. When it comes to any other capital crime in the Torah, a warning has to be issued. And how exactly does that warning look? The Gemara says it's a machlokas tanayim. Amen. Misimasala be'eda. You need a court of 23. Ve'edim. You need two witnesses. Ve'hasra'a. And you need a warning. Ve'achio diyu shu chayiv misa be'Beis Din. And the warning is, Beis Din will kill you. But according to the Tanakama, you don't have to tell them how Beis Din is going to kill you. Just simply the fact that Beis Din is going to kill you is sufficient warning. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Achio diyu be'ez misa hinerag. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's not enough. That's an insufficient warning. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you must warn them not only that they're going to die, but exactly how Beis Din is going to kill you. Then and only then is a proper warning issued. Then and only then is the person subject to the death penalty. And what the Gemara now is saying is that according to Rav Meir and the Chachamim, here's exactly what happened. The husband came into court with two witnesses. And before we even started the proceeding, the witnesses said to the courtroom, look, here's what happened. We did issue a warning, but we didn't say how the person was going to die. Now, in this particular case, by the way, how is she going to die? So it's funny. When initially preparing the Gemara, I got it wrong. I thought she's going to die with chenek, meaning strangulation, because that's an adulteress. An adulteress gets chanika, they get strangulation. I was wrong, meaning this is a nara hamurasa. So she's subject to the skila punishment. Okay, so had I been a witness in the case, and I wouldn't even want to think about that, but I would have issued the wrong ruling. Okay, but the halacha is nara hamurasa's b'skila. So the proper warning would have been that not only subject to the death penalty, but skila as well. So now, if, let's say, the witnesses came and they told the Beis Din, we did issue a warning, but we didn't tell them how they're going to die. So now, is this a capital case or not? The Tanaim debate this very issue. And now the Gemara is suggesting that the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim of our Mishnah are hinging on these two positions, where Rav Meir says that you only need three because it's not a capital case. Because the witness didn't say how they're going to die. According to the Chachamim, 23. Why? Because it's a capital case. Because according to the Chachamim, you only need to say that Beis Din is going to kill you.
Isn't that there could be other witnesses?
So Rashi explains, it's an excellent question. The question is, well, if Rameir is worried about laws, and remember, the way he sets it up, everyone's worried about laws, so why are we worried about other witnesses? So Rashi says, once he introduces two witnesses in the beginning of the case, so we assume that there are no other witnesses, even when you subscribe to the position of Choshen Lalaz. It's definitely a little bit of a stretch saying that, but Rashi says that. And that's, you know, perhaps one of the difficulties in Rashi's Pshat. Okay. We are now up to the fourth explanation of the Gemara. We are on the bottom of Chesam and Beis, Rav Papa. Rav Papa Amar Hacha B'Maiskin. What are we talking about over here? B'Isha. Sorry, I added words. I do that. Rav Papa Amar Hacha B'Isha Chavei Raskin. We're talking about where the woman was educated. She knows the Torah and she knows the laws of the Torah and she represents what's called a chavera. We generally speak about it in terms of a chaver, but she could be educated as well. She is in this case, and therefore she knows the halacha. Do I have to issue a warning to somebody who knows the Torah and knows the halacha? Everybody has the Yetzirah. Everyone is subject to doing an avera. Whether you are or you're not a Talmud Chacham is not going to change that. In fact, just remind everybody, the Gemara at the end of Sukkah says that the gadol, right? Call a gadol mechaver, yotzer gadol heimenu. That the truth of the matter is that your yetzahara keeps up with you. So just because she's a chavera does not mean that she's not tempted. So she's a chavera. She knows the halacha. Does a chaver / chavera? Does she need or does he or she need a warning? Machlokes hatanayim. So the kamifugi beplugged the Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbanan Detanya. The Gemara quotes the following brayso: Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Chaver in Sarach Hasra. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says that if the person is a chaver, does not need a warning. By virtue of the fact that they're a chaver or she's a chavera, it means that they know the halacha. What's the purpose of a warning? According to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, a warning has only one singular purpose, and that is: does the person know that what he's doing is wrong? Does the person know that what they're doing is violating the Torah? So if you're a chavera, the answer is going to be yes, even without us asking. Because you know the Torah, and you know the halacha. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that a chavera and chavera do not need a warning. The whole purpose of a warning is just to know. Did you know that this was wrong? And the Gemara doesn't quote the other opinion, but the other opinion is the Chachamim who say no. Everybody needs a warning. Even if you're Talmud Chacham, you still need a warning. And now what the Gemara is suggesting, Rav Papa is suggesting, that this is a machlok between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. That the woman in question over here who committed the adultery was an Avraham Arasa. There were witnesses. The witnesses did not issue a warning. And she was a Chavera. So the Chachamim say that this is a capital case. Why? Because we don't need a warning. They subscribe to Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda. And Rav Meir says no. Even such a woman would require a warning. And so therefore, it's not a capital case because they didn't issue a warning. And therefore, it's just a civil case. And therefore, it's only three. Parenthetically, over here, we do paskin like the Chachamim in that everybody needs a warning. Nobody's going to be punished without a warning. Okay, the language of the Rambam is a little bit tricky. I'm not gonna go into it, but the Rambam does pass like the Chachamim that everybody needs a warning, and then the Rambam goes on to write that the whole purpose of a warning is to distinguish between Shogig and Mason. Okay. Anyway, Rav Ashi Amar Kigon. We are now up to the fifth answer of the Gemara, and Rav Ashi, and he says like this: To Asra Be Malkus or La Asra Be Katala. It's an unusual scenario. The witnesses are about to see the adultery. And the witnesses said to her, don't do it. And if you do it, you're subject to... And then they said, lashes. Now, on one hand, they're kind of right. I mean, they miss the important part, which is, of course, this is a capital crime and subject to the death penalty. But on one hand, however, they're kind of right. Why are they kind of right? Because let's consider. Adultery is a negative prohibition of the Torah. One of the Aseres Adibros. It's low sinof. So, is it a lav? Is it a negative prohibition? The answer is yes. Are negative prohibitions subject to malchus? And again, the answer is yes. Now, it is also a capital crime, and it's also subject to the death penalty. But the witnesses didn't say that. So when the witnesses come in and say, don't do that, and if you do that, you're subject to lashes, are you actually now subject to lashes? And the Gemara is saying now, this is a machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So the Asra Bei Malkus or Asra Bei Ketala. V'kamiflugi b'plukta the Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbanan. And once again, we treat ourselves to another Mishnah. And the Mishnah says that none. Malkus b'shlosha mishum Rabbi Shmuel amr b'esrim v'shlosha. A case of lashes. How many judges do I need? Our Mishnah taught us. Machlokus between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shmuel. Tanakama says 3, Rabbi Shmuel says 23. Now, again, what's that machlokas? We'll discuss that later on. But in other words, but the machlokas in Rameh and the Chochamim are basically now paralleling the machlokas of the Tanakama and Rabbi Shmuel. Because Rav Ashi was saying that the warning was issued, and the warning was that you're subject to a capital punishment, but they didn't say which capital punishment. Here, there was a warning issue, but it was only for Malkus, not for Misa. Okay. Okay. Again, there's more to discuss on this, but we're going to go on. Ravina Amar. We are up to now the sixth answer of the Gemara. Now, this answer is going to take the largest amount of real estate in our daf today. Ravina says, Kigon, Shinimsa Echem in Eidim Karav Apostle. So, comes out like this. There were a lot of witnesses to the adultery. When I say a lot, I mean more than two. Let's keep it simple. Let's say there were three witnesses. But of the three witnesses who saw the adultery, so one of those three witnesses was either related or was disqualified. And now the question comes down to the following. When I have an extraneous witness, now there really is no such thing as an extraneous witness. In other words, everyone who sees as a witness is a witness. But if, let's say, we knocked out one of those three, can the case still work with the remaining two? Now the Gemara says over here that Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi have a debate within the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. So there's a lot of information we need to become familiar with in order to understand now how this would apply to our case as well. So let's get into it. They're debating a machlokis between Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe within the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. Meaning, this is a machlokis and a machlokis within a machlokis. First, let's start off with the following. We have a pasuk in the Torah that says that a person, al pi shnaim edim, o al pi shlosha edim, yamos. That when a person can be put to death, he can be put to death either with two or three witnesses. The Gemara in Makos, the Mishnah Makos, asks a really simple question. If two witnesses is sufficient to put somebody to death, certainly three is going to be sufficient. Why would the Torah have to outline either two or three? What was the point of that? And
this case you mentioned.
Well, exactly. So. So the Mishnah Makos presents the opinion of the Chachamim, but we're not going to be focusing on that. We're going to be focusing on the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says that when the Torah introduces us to a third witness, the Torah was not there saying it as a leniency, but rather saying it as a stringency, as a chumrah. Did not. And now we go back to the Gemara and we read the Mishnah inside. This is the Mishnah Makos. Rabbi Akiva Amar Lo Bashli She'el Ala Hachmir Olav Lasos Dino Kayotzi Be'elu. That the reason why the Torah introduces us to the third witness is that the Torah is coming to teach us that the third witness is going to be subject to the same punishment as the first two. Now, even though I didn't need the third witness, but nevertheless, the third witness is subject to the punishment of the first two. Meaning, let's say I have three witnesses coming, and let's say all three witnesses are proven to be Edom Zomimim. Meaning I have another pair of witnesses that say, I don't know what these three people are talking about. Imanu Aizim Makom Ploni. And so now what do we do? V'asisam lokasher zamam lasos achiv. We'll do to them what they conspired to do to the defendant. In this particular case, the defendant, if the defendant was supposed to be put to death, so we're going to put to death the three witnesses. Now the third witness will come to you and say, wait one second. Let's all slow down. I understand those first two, you're going to kill them. I get it. But I'm a third wheel. You're not going to kill me as well. You didn't need me. To which Rabbi Akiva says, that's exactly the point. Meaning that the reason why the Torah spells out two and three is because in this regard, you're part of the group. You're therefore going to be subject to the same punishment. And yes, it's true we didn't need you. But once you become collectively part of the group, you're now one of the Edom, and therefore you're subject to the death penalty. So in case... That's an excellent point. For our purposes, let's assume that's true. Meaning all three of them were proven to be Edom Zomimim. Okay. Okay, let's... I'll put a pregnant pause over here because I know more information. But for our purposes right now, let's just say that's true. So im kein anush akosuf es anitapol over avera ka over avera. So now Rabbi Kiva just is going to make a hashkafic comment, which is, look, that third guy wasn't needed. And yet, once he attaches himself to those two witnesses, and the three of them are proven to be conspired, so he's going to get the same punishment they are. So Rabbi Akiva says, if that's true for bad, it's most certainly true for good as well. If you attach yourself to someone doing a mitzvah, you're going to be rewarded to the same degree as those people who are doing the mitzvah. So an aider and a better to conspiring witnesses are going to receive the same punishment. For sure, an aider and a better to someone who's doing a mitzvah is going to be credited with the same mitzvah. Okay, that's nice hashkafa. We return now to our discussion. And now the Gemara says, and now we're also going to go one step further, which is, once we say that the third one is subject to the same punishment as the first two, and basically now the three become a unit, so that also means that if the third one is either disqualified or related, so what, and the three witnesses are now a unit and unified. So that means even in a case of three, if one of the three is a karva pasul, that's going to upset the entire testimony. And we're going to throw all three of them out. And we'll go even a step further. What if it's 100 witnesses, and of the 100 witnesses, one of them is karva pasul? It's the same conclusion, meaning it's a unit. And once one of them is a carver apostle, we throw the entire testimony out. Tamalomer, just give me 1 second. Tamalomer, Adim. So the Torah says Adim. Fine. So now we have learned together that according to Rabbi Akiva, a third comes on board to the testimony. They are now united, and united they stand, united they fall. If they've proven to be Adim Zomim, and all three are going to be put to death. If one of them becomes a carver apostle, they were going to throw out the entire testimony. That's Rabbi Akiva. Now, Amar Rav Yossi. So now we have established the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. We continue now because now we're going to learn the subsequent machlokas, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi, within the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rav Yossi b'medvar mom b'dinei nefashos, ava b'dinei mamnos tiskayim edus b'sha'ar. Rabbi Yossi says this is true, but this is only true for capital cases. It's not true for monetary cases. If I have three witnesses in a case of civil law, of monetary law, and one of them are proven to be Karav Apostle, we can still keep the case alive with the remaining two, and Rabbi Akiva would agree to this. Question. What's the difference between a civil case and a capital case? Meaning, once a unit, always a unit, and why should there be any distinction? So Rashi over here explains that the difference goes like this. When it comes to a capital case, the court has an agenda. And what is the agenda of the court? Vihitzilu esa'eda. The court should try in any way possible to exonerate the defendant. Meaning, the court really should look for ways to get the defendant out of being put to death. Capital crime is on the books, and at the same time, the court also should try not to execute execution. And so, if we have a way of tearing apart the testimony, we will do so. Therefore, in a case of capital crime, if one of them turned out to be Karav Apostle, that will demolish everything. But if in a case of civil law, we don't have this agenda of Itzilu Seida, because let's consider that in any monetary case between two litigants, what's bad for one is good for another. So there is no Vihitzilu Seida. Okay. So, Rabbi Yossi makes a distinction between monetary law and capital law. Rabbi Akiva does say that the three are going to be a unit, but only for dinei nefashos, not for dinei mamnos. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi on the other hand, says, echa dinei mamnos ve'echa dinei nefashos. That no, Rabbi Akiva will say unilaterally that once I have three witnesses, they represent a unit for both capital case and for monetary case as well. Now, the emasai. Now, the Gemara says, but let's stick in one more proviso. That when is it true by when it comes to eight and nefashos, the three are going to be treated as a unit? Bizman she'isru b'hem. That's only if they issue the warning of bizman shelo isru b'hem. But if the three did not issue a warning, we do not unify the three together. And the Gemara makes an argument, a cogent argument, why this has to be in fact so. Because the Gemara says we're now on the top of Teth Amud Beis, Ma yaseh shnei edem ve'echa shero be'echa shaharag et hanefesh. Because let's consider. Let's imagine that we have a murderer, at least he's about to commit murder, and the three people who are standing by watching, of those three, two of them are brothers. So now what the murderer is going to do is he's basically going to look at those three and he's going to say, ha, I'm good. I mean, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, obviously, he's going to have issues after 120 years. But in terms of the court down here, he's good. Why? Because of the three of you, two of you are brothers, and you all three now are witnesses, unified to testify against me. Well, we're going to knock out the brothers, and therefore we're left with one, and so I'm good. So he's going to commit murder.
Why does the second one?
So what the Gemara is now saying as a part of the argument of, even within Rabbi Akiva, we're only going to unify them if all three issued a warning. But if two of the three issued a warning, so then the one brother who didn't issue a warning, even according to Rabbi Akiva, is not part and parcel of the Eidus. Okay, fine.
So what, once he issued a warning, he must testify? He cannot just...
He's now part of the group. That's correct. So, my yasu shnei ach ve'echad sharao ve'echad shaharo gets a nefesh. Okay, and now, let's just lay it out now. So we now know a machlokus between Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi within the opinion of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says that we're going to unify all the witnesses. And even if they're more than two, even if they're three, we're going to unify. Now, according to Rebbe, that's only by Dina and Nefashos. According to, but by Dina Mamonos, we're not going to do that. And according to Rebbe Yossi, we're always going to unify both by Dina Mamonos and Dina Nefashos. And now, all this brings us back to our Mishnah, where we're talking about the case of Motzi Shemra. And Rameir and the Chachamim are having an argument of whether you need 3 or 23. So how are they, what's the machlokas? It's hinging on this very issue. Top Rashi on Tesamud Beis. Rashi writes, Shara ba'echa shahara gets a nefesh. Uplug to the Rameir v'Rabbanan nami kigon shenimsa echa min ashlo shakar v'apasal. We're talking about a case where there are three witnesses. Those three witnesses, one of them is either related or disqualified. V'rav v'shasak v'lo hisra. And that one witness saw, but he didn't say anything. He didn't issue a warning. Rabbi Meir Savala Karabi Yosi Dam Rabbi Dina Fashos Loshna Hisra Veloshna Shasak Edus and Betela. Whereas Rabbi Meir will subscribe to the opinion of Rabbi Yosi, which is that it does not matter whether he warned, whether he did not warn. The witnesses is going to be disqualified because according to Rabbi Yosi, we always unify under every circumstance. And the Rabbanan suffer Karebi, and the Chachamim hold like Rebbe, the Hech of the Shasak, Tiskai Ma'edus Beshar Umikdala, where, no, that according to Rebbe, in a scenario in which one of the witnesses did not issue a warning, he is not unified with the other two, and therefore this can be tried as a capital case, and therefore we need a court of 23. Okay, that is a sixth way to explain the machlokas between Rameir and the Chachamim. And for this morning, let's just do one more. Let's do seven, and then of this particular issue, we do subscribe to Rabbi Akiva, and within Rabbi Akiva, we do subscribe to Rebbe over that of Rabbi Yossi, that you need, in order to be considered part of the group, you need to issue a warning. Yes. That's coming up later on, right? We're going to be discussing that very question later on in the Masechta. I think it comes up in the fourth parak. Okay.
The people who issue the warning and the witnesses have missing.
That also is coming up later on. Okay, good. Okay, and when I say that's coming up later on, I mean it's coming up right now. The Gemara now is going to offer a seventh explanation of the machlokas. The Gemara says, "Ebay same." The Gemara says it could very, very well be kagon sheyisru ba'al acherim, that a warning was in fact issued. Velo hisru ba'edim, but the witnesses themselves were not the ones who issued the warning. And so now, is it a capital case where there were witnesses, there was a warning, but they weren't, the witnesses in the warning were not the same people?
So they witnessed somebody else give the warning?
And they witnessed somebody else give a warning. That's absolutely correct. So, kagon sheyisru ba'achem v'lo hisru ba'edim, v'kemifligi b'plugta d'Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbanan. And this is subject to another machlokus between Rabbi Yosi and the Chachamim d'Etnan. Rabbi Yosi omer la'olam eino nerag ashu al pi shnei edav, ad sheyuhu pi shnei edav masrim bo shenemar, al pi shnayim edim. Whereas according to the opinion of Rabbi Yosi, the witnesses themselves have to be issuing the warning. And if the witnesses are not issuing the warning, even though someone else did issue the warning, so then, again, it's a technicality, but this is not a capital case. And so therefore, Rav Meir subscribes to this viewpoint. Rav Meir therefore says it's to be judged by three. And the Chachamim, on the other hand, do not subscribe to this viewpoint and therefore say that the warning is considered a valid warning and therefore it's a capital case and therefore it's going to be 23.
Why aren't they concerned about the fact that the witness who issued the warning will show up later on?
And again, right, and again, that comes back to that sticking point in Rashi.
But
that,
I mean, we know about them. I mean, there's nothing like
right. But in other words, but the Rashi will tell you. I mean, Rashi said in the Amud Aleph that once witnesses have come, so we're not worried about follow up witnesses. But again, that's that sticking point that we made earlier.
What is accepted in this case?
Oh, in this case, I don't know.
Okay, because so if there are two, if you have this, there can be two separate with the witnesses and one. Then there would be issue with one of the ones who won is not relative. That's also.
I accept that. Okay, so where do we stand right now? So first of all, we're almost all caught up, which is good. And the entirety of today's daf is dedicated to the question of Motzi Shemra. Machlokus in the Mishnah. Rav Meir says it's done in front of three. Chachamim say it's done in front of 23. And then just a question of what are they arguing about? And the Gemara is going to give a total of 8 different explanations. And so far this morning, we've gone through 7 of the 8.